I'm Alan Combs. I want to welcome Nicolette Pace. She is a founder of Nutrisource, Inc. You are a registered dietitian. Is that correct? Do I have your credentials correct?
You have one of the credentials, but that'll survive.
Registered dietitian, MSCDE-CDN. I don't know what all it means, but it sounds pretty impressive.
It is impressive. I'm actually finishing up a certification in behavioral counseling, so we've got a whole package.
I see. If I gave all your credits, we'd have no more time for the interview. Anyway, so you have this story that came out that says that people's behavior is so tied to nutrition, and we look for so many other things, but it is your belief, or is it your belief, I should phrase it, that what we eat really can contribute to violent behavior?
It's not just my belief, but there is accumulating evidence that is supporting this. And it is quite controversial because we're the first to kind of look at adverse social factors, you know, and those are notwithstanding. They are still a very, very important piece of the puzzle. But when you really do look logically at the nutrition end, to ask a person to operate in a healthy fashion without getting an adequate diet is almost ludicrous to think.
So if someone has antisocial behavior, if they've got rage, there's a good chance or better than even chance that their nutrition, their intake of food, probably needs some adjustment.
Yes, this is safe to say. And this has actually been founded in studies that are actually looking at a very close population, a population that we can carefully examine because we have them contained. We know exactly what they're eating, and we're monitoring their behavior very, very closely.
The prison population. Yeah, right. So they gave nutrients to prisoners, right?
Correct.
And discovered a change in behavior?
They found a decrease in violent acts.
These were researchers, or these were, was it Cambridge that did the study?
There are a lot of studies coming out. This is really over the last 20 years. It is accumulating evidence, and we have some definite concrete evidence linking some of these brain modulators to, deficiencies.
But so many of us have sodas and snacks and eat all the sugar, and yet most people are not violent. So why is it that, considering how much of the stuff we eat, a small percentage of those people really have violent behavior?
Well, that's because we are really looking at underlying psychosocial problems, psychopathic behaviors, and other, real causes, which is why this is controversial. We can't ignore those. Those are really the backbone. But frankly, for all of us in the general public, we do want to look at the content of our diet because, frankly, it's no secret nowadays. People are really living on the edge. They're feeling ultimately very, very stressed. And ultimately not happy. So we really want to take a look at that because if we can help people that really do have some significant underlying genetic or organic causes for having either aggressive or irritability, just think what it can do for the rest of us.
Actually, I'm saying it was Oxford that gave the vitamin supplements to prison inmates. It seems like, though, it's hard to avoid the kinds of foods we keep hearing are bad for us because everywhere you go, there are those foods, and we just... How do you live a pure food diet in today's fast-paced society?
You really can't. You're really up against it. We can look at trying to go with maybe equating the balance a little bit better. There seems to be a love-hate, don't have. But instead, you can have a few items, periodically. We're looking at a daily diet of really empty calorie foods. And when you do look at several people, speaking on behalf of many of the people I treat, the diet content is roughly just convenient food options, sodas, processed foods, ending up with absolutely zero content from any plants whatsoever. And with that, sluggish metabolism, disruptive mood, and overall not feeling very good.
So if people listening to me right now are irritable, is it their diet or is it maybe their life? Maybe they've got real issues and problems in their life, but I guess it would affect the way you deal with those problems if you are nutritionally more sound.
Right, and this is almost like a chicken and the egg theory, which is really coming first. So they're conjoined, and we're very quick to, kind of look at these psychosocial factors, and they're definitely integral. But we do get a charge out of eating various foods. They are definitely hitting the pleasure centers, and it's really hard to separate. But by and large, what I do see in the population are people who are walking around who are not meeting their basic physical, physiologic needs on a day-to-day basis. That being, they're not eating it anywhere near a routine interval, and they're pretty much sleep deficient. With that, of course, you're going to have some mood problems. And, it's not really fair to say that you're an emotional eater at that state. It's absolutely illogical to think if you can go around in the course of a day without having had a meal for about 10 hours and then come home at the end of a very, very stressful day and overeat, that you're an emotional eater. And this is commonly what people face and what they call themselves as emotional eaters, or that they couldn't, you know, adhere to a diet.
And if you have more than, is it true, 10% of your calories from sweets, you are then in a very much danger of having too much sugar in your diet and causing these kind of problems?
Absolutely. That's a general guideline, and it's set. You know, you could take one soda, and already that doesn't allow you really to have anything else in the course of the day, which is kind of also crazy. Yet we crave the sweet taste, so we are looking for alternate sources, and, you know, that opens up a whole nother topic of sweeteners and zero-calorie level sweeteners, but yet the brain is, again, you know, looking for that profoundly sweet taste.
So if you have a sugar substitute, is that better for you than sugar?
Technically, it may be neutral on blood sugar, but what it does with the brain and your cravings, that's subject to more discussion.
So you're saying it doesn't really help because the craving is still there, even if it's a sugar substitute?
It's a temporary craving, but you'll end up transferring that into something else that will be carbohydrate laden.
So you shouldn't have more than one soda a day, if that.
If that's your choice, if you want soda as your sweet, then pretty much that would be it, yeah.
Ice cream. Okay, how much ice cream can I have?
It depends, I suppose. Ice cream is depending on the sweetness level. But, I mean, you're looking at a serving size, but you rarely do you get that in any type of ice cream parlor. You're looking at overall, you know, balancing that, you know, going out and having an indulgence is one thing, satisfying a craving in a controlled way. But, again, people are, you know, taking desserts really two times a day. There is just a lot of sweetened drinks out there.
It
all mounts up.
This sounds very severe, though, what we need to do to be healthy. It sounds like almost impossible, because to change your diet, to get off those sweets, to stop the craving, it's not easy to do that, right?
If you approach it from the typical willpower perspective, again, if you look at really trying to see how your body is operating, and you look at actually spacing meals at appropriate intervals, at intervals that match your lifestyle, what your work schedule is, when you're home, when you're out, it really is a snap. And I have evidence in really the majority of my patients, they do amazingly well, and they are very, very surprised at how well they're stabilized.
Well, what do they do? I mean, just eat when you're hungry, right?
Sort of, but we have to really get in tune with these body sensations. They're not really overt, and that's the tricky part. We could look at actually eating by the clock if you want, and looking at how long does food really stay in your stomach, your gut, et cetera. And we're safe to say that roughly on a 4 to 6 hour schedule, we'll be needing to nourish our body in some fashion.
So every 4 to 6 hours, we should eat something.
Yeah, I think that's a good rule of thumb. It's not absolute, but it's a good place to start.
And they say little meals a lot of times during the day are better than, like, one or two big meals a day?
Right. That's what. That's actually the controversy. That's not absolute at all. In fact, some people, depending on your waking state, I've had patients who are eating literally every 2 hours because they've been told to eat 6 to 8 times a day. And that's inappropriate because you're kind of walking around in a fed state all day long. You want to allow your body to come down from those highs of eating and actually have that unfed state. So this is really the opportunity to work with somebody who can really guide you and integrate that lifestyle so you can feel a lot better.
So what are you having for dinner tonight?
What am I having for dinner?
Right.
Probably seafood, one of my favorites.
Really?
Yeah.
No, I don't like fish, though. So they say it's really good for you, but I'm not a fish eater. I like shrimp, but that's not good for you, right?
Why is it not good for you?
Shrimp? I mean, that's like shellfish. It's not as good as fresh fish, correct?
No. They're great. You. It's a low-calorie protein. It's got lots
of
minerals and copper. Enjoy yourself.
I feel better now. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you, Nicolette. Thanks for talking to us tonight.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Nicolette Pace, founder of Nutrisource, Inc.,